and they sought for his hiding place. But Melkor, trusting in the strength of Utomno and the might of his servants, came forth suddenly to war, and struck the first blow ere the Valar were prepared. And he assailed the lights of Iluin and Ormel, and cast down their pillars, and broke their lamps. In the overthrow of the mighty pillars, lands were broken, and seas arose in tumult. And when the lamps were spilled, destroying flame was poured out over the earth. And the shape of Arda, and the symmetry of its waters and its lands, was marred in that time, so that the first designs of the Valar were never after restored. In the confusion and the darkness, Melkor escaped, though fear fell upon him. For above the roaring of the seas he heard the voice of Manwë as a mighty wind, and the earth trembled beneath the feet of Tulkas. But he came to Utomno ere Tulkas could overtake him, and there he lay hid. And the Valar could not at that time overcome him, for the greater part of their strength was needed to restrain the tumults of the earth, and to save from ruin all that could be saved of their labour. And afterwards they feared to rend the earth again, until they knew where the children of Iluvatar were dwelling, who were yet to come in a time that was hidden from the Valar. Thus ended the spring of Arda. The dwelling of the Valar upon Almaren was utterly destroyed, and they had no abiding place upon the face of the earth. Therefore they departed from Middle-earth and went to the land of Aman, the westernmost of all lands upon the borders of the world. For its west shores looked upon the outer sea, that is called by the elves Ekaya, encircling the kingdom of Arda. How wide is that sea none knew but the Valar, and beyond it are the walls of the night. But the east shores of Aman were the uttermost end of Beleger, the great sea of the west. And since Melkor was returned to Middle-earth, and they could not yet overcome him, the Valar fortified their dwellings, and upon the shores of the sea they raised the Pelori, the mountains of Aman, highest upon earth. And above all the mountains of the Pelori was that height upon whose summit Manwë set his throne. Taniquetil the elves named that holy mountain, and Oyolasa, everlasting whiteness, and Elarina crowned with stars, and many names beside. But the Sindar spoke of it in their later tongue as Amon Uilas. From their halls upon Taniquetil, Manwë and Varda could look out across the earth, even into the furthest east. Behind the walls of the Pelori, the Valar established their domain in that region which is called Valinor, and there were their houses, their gardens, and their towers. In that guarded land, the Valar gathered great store of light, and all the fairest things that were saved from the ruin. And many others yet fairer they made anew, and Valinor became more beautiful even than Middle-earth in the spring of Arda. And it was blessed, for the deathless dwelt there, and there naught faded nor withered, neither was there any stain upon flower or leaf in that land, nor any corruption or sickness in anything that lived, for the very stones and waters were hallowed. And when Valinor was full wrought, and the mansions of the Valar were established, in the midst of the plain beyond the mountains they built their city, Valmar of many bells. Before its western gate there was a green mound, Ezoloha, that is named also Karalaira. And Yavanna hallowed it, and she sat there long upon the green grass and sang a song of power, in which was set all her thought of things that grow in the earth. But Nienna thought in silence, and watered the mound with tears. In that time the Valar were gathered together to hear the song of Yavanna, and they sat silent upon their thrones of council, in the Mahanaxa, the Ring of Doom, near to the golden gates of Valmar. And Yavanna Kementari sang before them, and they watched. And as they watched, upon the mound there came forth two slender shoots. And silence was over all the world in that hour, nor was there any other sound save the chanting of Yavanna. Under her song the saplings grew and became fair and tall and came to flower, and thus there awoke in the world the two trees of Valinor. Of all things which Yavanna made, they have most renown, and about their fate and all the tales of the elder days are woven. The one had leaves of dark green, that beneath were a shining silver, and from each of his countless flowers a dew of silver light was ever falling, and the earth beneath was dappled with the shadows of his fluttering leaves. The other bore leaves of a young green, like the new opened beech. Their edges were of glittering gold. Flowers swung upon her branches in clusters of yellow flame, formed each to a glowing horn that spilled a golden rain upon the ground. And from the blossom of that tree there came forth warmth and a great light. Telperion, the one, was called in Valinor, and Silpion, and Ningqualote, and many other names. But Lauralin the other was, and Malinalda, and Colurian, and many names in song beside. In 7 hours the glory of each tree waxed to full and waned again to naught, and each awoke once more to life an hour before the other ceased to shine. Thus in Valinor, twice every day, there came a gentle hour of softer light when both trees were faint and their gold and silver beams were mingled. Telperion was the elder of the trees, and came first to full stature and to bloom. In that first hour in which he shone, the white glimmer of a silver dawn, the Valar reckoned not into the tale of hours, but named it the opening hour, and counted from it the ages of their reign in Valinor. Therefore, at the 6th hour of the first day, and of all the joyful days thereafter, until the darkening of Valinor, Telperion ceased his time of flower. And at the 12th hour, Lauralin her blossoming. And each day of the Valar in Aman contained 12 hours, and ended with the second mingling of the lights, in which Lauralin was waning, but Telperion was waxing. But the light that was spilled from the trees endured long, ere it was taken up into the airs or sank down into the earth. And the dews of Telperion, and the rain that fell from Lauralin, Varda hoarded in great vats like shining lakes, that were to all the land of the Valar as wells of water and of light. Thus began the days of the bliss of Valinor, and thus began also the count of time. But as the ages drew on to the hour appointed by Iluvatar for the coming of the firstborn, Middle-earth lay in a twilight beneath the stars that Varda had wrought in the ages forgotten of her labours in Ea. And in the darkness Melkor dwelt, and still often walked abroad in many shapes of power and fear, and he wielded cold and fire from the tops of the mountains to the deep furnaces that are beneath them. And whatsoever was cruel or violent or deadly in those days is laid to his charge. From the beauty and bliss of Valinor, the Valar came seldom over the mountains to Middle-earth, but gave to the land beyond the Pelori their care and their love. And in the midst of the blessed realm were the mansions of Aule, and there he laboured long. For in the making of all things in that land he had the chief part, and he wrought there many beautiful and shapely works, both openly and in secret. Of him comes the lore and knowledge of the earth, and of all things that it contains, whether the lore of those things that make not, but seek only for the understanding of what is, or the lore of all craftsmen, the weaver, the shaper of wood, and the worker in metals, and the tiller and husbandman also, though these last and all that deal with things that grow and bear fruit, must look also to the spouse of Aule, Yavanna Kementari. Aule it is who is named the Friend of the Noldor, For of him they learned much in after days, and they are the most skilled of the elves, and in their own fashion according to the gifts which Iluvatar gave to them, they added much to his teaching, delighting in tongues and in scripts, and in the figures of broidery, of drawing, and of carving. The Noldor also it was who first achieved the making of gems, and the fairest of all gems were the Silmarils, and they are lost. But Manwë Sulimo, highest and holiest of the Valar, sat upon the borders of Aman, forsaking not in his thought the outer lands. For his throne was set in majesty upon the pinnacle of Tani Quetil, the highest of the mountains of the world, standing upon the margin of the sea. Spirits in the shape of hawks and eagles flew ever to and from his halls, and their eyes could see to the depths of the seas and pierce the hidden caverns beneath the world. Thus they brought word to him of well-nigh all that passed in Arda. Yet some things were hidden even from the eyes of Manwë and the servants of Manwë, for where Melkor sat in his dark thought, impenetrable shadows lay. Manwë has no thought for his own honour, and is not jealous of his power, but rules all to peace. The Vanyar he loved best of all the elves, and of him they received song and poetry, for poetry is the delight of Manwë, and the song of words is his music. His raiment is blue, and blue is the fire of his eyes, and his scepter is of sapphire, which the Noldor wrought for him. And he was appointed to be the vice-regent of Iluvatar, king of the world of Valar and elves and men, and the chief defence against the evil of Melkor. With Manwë dwelt Varda the most beautiful, she who in the Sindarin tongue is named Elbereth, queen of the Valar, maker of the stars, and with them were a great host of spirits in blessedness. But Ulmo was alone, and he abode not in Valinor, nor ever came thither, unless there were need for a great council. He dwelt from the beginning of Arda in the outer ocean, and still he dwells there. Thence he governs the flowing of all waters, and the ebbing, the courses of all rivers, and the replenishment of springs, the distilling of all dews and rain in every land beneath the sky. In the deep places he gives thought to music great and terrible, and the echo of that music runs through all the veins of the world in sorrow and in joy. For if joyful is the fountain that rises in the sun, its springs are in the wells of sorrow unfathomed at the foundation of the earth. The Teleri learned much of Ulmo, and for this reason their music has both sadness and enchantment. Salmar came with him to Arda, he who made the horns of Ulmo, that none may ever forget who once has heard them, and Osse and Unen also, to whom he gave the government of the waves and the movement of the inner seas, and many other spirits beside. And thus it was by the power of Ulmo that even under the darkness of Melkor life coursed still through many secret loads, and the earth did not die. And to all who were lost in that darkness, or wandered far from the light of the Valar, the ear of Ulmo was ever open. Nor has he ever forsaken Middle-earth, and whatsoever may since have befallen of ruin or of change, he has not ceased to take thought for it, and will not until the end of days. And in that time of dark, Yavanna also was unwilling utterly to forsake the outer lands. For all things that grow are dear to her, and she mourned for the works that she had begun in Middle-earth, but Melkor had marred. Therefore, leaving the house of Aule and the flowering meads of Valinor, she would come at times and heal the hurts of Melkor. And returning, she would ever urge the Valar to that war with his evil dominion, that they must surely wage ere the coming of the firstborn. And Orome, tamer of beasts, would ride too at whiles in the darkness of the unlit forests. As a mighty hunter, he came with spear and bow, pursuing to the death the monsters and fell creatures of the kingdom of Melkor, and his white horse Naha shone like silver in the shadows. Then the sleeping earth trembled at the beat of his golden hooves, and in the twilight of the world, Orome would sound Valaroma, his great horn, upon the plains of Arda, whereat the mountains echoed, and the shadow of evil fled away, and Melkor himself quailed in Utumno, foreboding the wrath to come. But even as Orome passed, the servants of Melkor would gather again, and the lands were filled with shadows and deceit. Now all is said concerning the manner of the earth and its rulers in the beginning of days, and ere the world became such as the children of Iluvata have known it. For elves and men are the children of Iluvata, and since they understood not fully that theme by which the children entered into the music, none of the Ainur dared to add anything to their fashion. For which reason, the Valar are to these kindreds rather their elders and their chieftains than their masters. And if ever in their dealings with elves and men the Ainur have endeavoured to force them when they would not be guided, seldom has this turned to good, howsoever good the intent. The dealings of the Ainur have indeed been mostly with the elves, for Iluvata made them more like in nature to the Ainur, though less in might and stature. Whereas to men he gave strange gifts. For it is said that after the departure of the Valar there was silence, and for an age Iluvata sat alone in thought. Then he spoke and said, "Behold, I love the earth, which shall be a mansion for the Quendi and the Atani. But the Quendi shall be the fairest of all earthly creatures, and they shall have and shall conceive and bring forth more beauty than all my children, and they shall have the greater bliss in this world. But to the Atani I will give a new gift." Therefore he willed that the hearts of men should seek beyond the world, and should find no rest therein, but they should have a virtue to shape their life amid the powers and chances of the world, beyond the music of the Ainur, which is as fate to all things else. And of their operation everything should be in form and deed completed, and the world fulfilled unto the last and smallest. But Iluvata knew that men, being set amid the turmoils of the powers of the world, would stray often, and would not use their gifts in harmony. And he said, "These two in their time shall find that all that they do redounds at the end only to the glory of my work." Yet the elves believe that men are often a grief to Manwë, who knows most of the mind of Iluvata. For it seems to the elves that men resembled Melkor most of all the Ainur, although he has ever feared and hated them, even those that served him. It is one with this gift of freedom that the children of men dwell only a short space in the world alive, and are not bound to it, and depart soon, whither the elves know not. Whereas the elves remain until the end of days, and their love of the earth and all the world is more single and more poignant therefore, and as the years lengthen ever more sorrowful. For the elves die not till the world dies, unless they are slain or waste in grief, and to both these seeming deaths they are subject. Neither does age subdue their strength, unless one grow weary of 10,000 centuries. And dying they are gathered to the halls of Mandos in Valinor, whence they may in time return. But the sons of men die indeed, and leave the world. Wherefore they are called the guests, or the strangers. Death is their fate, the gift of Iluvata, which as time wears even the powers shall envy. But Melkor has cast his shadow upon it, and confounded it with darkness, and brought forth evil out of good, and fear out of hope. Yet of old the Valar declared to the elves in Valinor that men shall join in the second music of the Ainur. Whereas Ilúvatar has not revealed what he purposes for the elves after the world's end, and Melkor has not discovered it. Of Aule and Yavanna. It is told that in their beginning the dwarves were made by Aule in the darkness of Middle-earth. For so greatly did Aule desire the coming of the children, to have learners to whom he could teach his lore and his crafts, that he was unwilling to await the fulfillment of the designs of Ilúvatar. And Aule made the dwarves even as they still are, because the forms of the children who were to come were unclear to his mind, and because the power of Melkor was yet over the earth. And he wished, therefore, that they should be strong and unyielding. But fearing that the other Valar might blame his work, he wrought in secret, and he made first the seven fathers of the dwarves in a hall under the mountains in Middle-earth. Now Ilúvatar knew what was done, and in the very hour that Aule's work was complete, and he was pleased, and began to instruct the dwarves in the speech that he had devised for them, Ilúvatar spoke to him, and Aule heard his voice and was silent. And the voice of Ilúvatar said to him, "Why hast thou done this? Why dost thou attempt a thing which thou knowest is beyond thy power and thy authority? For thou hast from me as a gift thy own being only, and no more. And therefore the creatures of thy hand and mind can live only by that being, moving when thou thinkest to move them. And if thy thought be elsewhere standing idle, is that thy desire?" Then Aule answered, "I did not desire such lordship. I desired things other than I am, to love and to teach them, so that they too might perceive the beauty of Ea, which thou hast caused to be. For it seemed to me that there is great room in Arda for many things that might rejoice in it, yet it is for the most part empty still, and dumb. And in my impatience I have fallen into folly. Yet the making of things is in my heart from my own making by thee. And the child of little understanding that makes a play of the deeds of his father may do so without thought of mockery, but because he is the son of his father. But what shall I do now, so that thou be not angry with me forever? As a child to his father, I offer to thee these things, the work of the hands which thou hast made. Do with them what thou wilt. But should I not rather destroy the work of my presumption?" Then Aule took up a great hammer to smite the dwarves, and he wept. But Ilúvatar had compassion upon Aule and his desire because of his humility. And the dwarves shrank from the hammer and were afraid, and they bowed down their heads and begged for mercy. And the voice of Ilúvatar said to Aule, "Thy offer I accepted even as it was made. Dost thou not see that these things have now a life of their own and speak with their own voices? Else they would not have flinched from thy blow, nor from any command of thy will." Then Aule cast down his hammer and was glad, and he gave thanks to Ilúvatar, saying, "May Eru bless my work and amend it." But Ilúvatar spoke again and said, "Even as I gave being to the thoughts of the Ainur at the beginning of the world, so now I have taken up thy desire and given to it a place therein. But in no other way will I amend thy handiwork. And as thou hast made it, so shall it be. But I will not suffer this, that these should come before the firstborn of my design, nor that thy impatience should be rewarded. They shall sleep now in the darkness under stone, and shall not come forth until the firstborn have awakened upon earth. And until that time thou and they shall wait, though long it seem. But when the time comes, I will awaken them, and they shall be to thee as children, and often strife shall arise between thine and mine, the children of my adoption, and the children of my choice. Then Aulë took the 7 fathers of the dwarves, and laid them to rest in far-sundered places. And he returned to Valinor, and waited while the long years lengthened. Since they were to come in the days of the power of Melkor, Aulë made the dwarves strong to endure. Therefore they are stone-hard, stubborn, fast in friendship and in enmity, and they suffer toil and hunger and hurt of body more hardily than all other speaking peoples. And they live long, far beyond the span of men, yet not forever. Aforetime it was held among the elves in Middle-earth that dying the dwarves returned to the earth and the stone of which they were made. Yet that is not their own belief, for they say that Aulë, the Maker, whom they call Mahal, cares for them and gathers them to Mandos in halls set apart, and that he declared to their fathers of old that Ilúvatar will hallow them and give them a place among the children in the end. Then their part shall be to serve Aulë and to aid him in the remaking of Arda after the last battle. They say also that the 7 fathers of the dwarves return to live again in their own kin, and to bear once more their ancient names, of whom Durin was the most renowned in after ages, father of that kindred most friendly to the elves, whose mansions were at Khazad-dûm. Now when Aulë laboured in the making of the dwarves, he kept his work hidden from the other Valar. But at last he opened his mind to Yavanna, and told her of all that had come to pass. Then Yavanna said to him, "Eru is merciful. Now I see that thy heart rejoiceth, as indeed it may, for thou hast received not only forgiveness, but bounty. Yet because thou hiddest this thought from me until its achievement, thy children will have little love for the things of my love. They will love first the things made by their own hands, as doth their father. They will delve in the earth, and the things that grow and live upon the earth they will not heed. Many a tree shall feel the bite of their iron without pity." But Aulë answered, "That shall also be true of the children of Ilúvatar, for they will eat and they will build. And though the things of thy realm have worth in themselves and would have worth if no children were to come, yet Eru will give them dominion. And they shall use all that they find in Arda, though not by the purpose of Eru, without respect or without gratitude." "Not unless Melkor darken their hearts," said Yavanna. And she was not appeased, but grieved in heart, fearing what might be done upon Middle-earth in days to come. Therefore she went before Manwë, and she did not betray the counsel of Aulë, but she said, "King of Arda, is it true, as Aulë hath said to me, that the children, when they come, shall have dominion over all the things of my labour, to do as they will therewith?" "It is true," said Manwë. "But why dost thou ask? For thou hadst no need of the teaching of Aulë." Then Yavanna was silent and looked into her own thought, and she answered, "Because my heart is anxious, thinking of the days to come. All my works are dear to me. Is it not enough that Melkor should have marred so many? Shall nothing that I have devised be free from the dominion of others?"
"If thou hadst thy will, what wouldst thou reserve?" said Manwë. "Of all thy realm, what dost thou hold dearest?"
"All have their worth," said Yavanna, "and each contributes to the worth of the others. But the Kelvar can flee or defend themselves, whereas the Alvar that grow cannot, and among these I hold trees dear. Long in the growing, swift shall they be in the felling, and unless they pay toll with fruit upon bough little mourned in their passing. So I see in my thought, would that the trees might speak on behalf of all things that have roots, and punish those that wrong them.
This is a strange thought, said Manwe.
Yet it was in the song, said Yavanna. For while thou wert in the heavens, and with Ulmo built the clouds and poured out the rains, I lifted up the branches of great trees to receive them, and some sang to Iluvatar amid the wind and the rain.
Then Manwe sat silent, and the thought of Yavanna that she had put into his heart grew and unfolded, and it was beheld by Iluvatar. Then it seemed to Manwe that the song rose once more about him, and he heeded now many things therein, that though he had heard them, he had not heeded before. And at last the vision was renewed. But it was not now remote, for he was himself within it. And yet he saw that all was upheld by the hand of Iluvatar, and the hand entered in, and from it came forth many wonders that had until then been hidden from him in the hearts of the Ainur. Then Manwe awoke, and he went down to Yavanna upon Ezelohar, and he sat beside her beneath the two trees. And Manwe said, O Kementari, Eru hath spoken, saying, Do then any of the Valar suppose that I did not hear all the song, even the least sound of the least voice? Behold, when the children awake, then the thought of Yavanna will awake also, and it will summon spirits from afar, and they will go among the Kelvar and the Olvar. And some will dwell therein, and be held in reverence, and their just anger shall be feared. For a time, while the firstborn are in their power, and while the secondborn are young. But dost thou not remember, Kementari, that thy thought sang not always alone? Did not thy thought and mine meet also, so that we took wing together, like great birds that soar above the clouds? That also shall come to be by the heed of Iluvatar, and before the children awake, there shall go forth with wings like the wind the eagles of the lords of the west. Then Yavanna was glad, and she stood up, reaching her arms towards the heavens, and she said, High shall climb the trees of Kementari, that the eagles of the king may house therein. But Manwe rose also, and it seemed that he stood to such a height that his voice came down to Yavanna as from the paths of the winds. Nay, he said, only the trees of Aula will be tall enough. In the mountains the eagles shall house, and hear the voices of those who call upon us. But in the forests shall walk the shepherds of the trees. Then Manwe and Yavanna parted for that time, and Yavanna returned to Aula, and he was in his smithy pouring molten metal into a mould. Eru is bountiful, she said. Now let thy children beware, for there shall walk a power in the forests whose wrath they will arouse at their peril. Nonetheless, they will have need of wood, said Aula, and he went on with his smith work.
Of the coming of the elves and the captivity of Melkor. Through long ages the Valar dwelt in bliss in the light of the trees beyond the mountains of Aman, but all Middle-earth lay in twilight under the stars. While the lamps had shone, growth began there which now was checked, because all was again dark. But already the oldest living things had arisen, in the seas the great weeds, and on earth the shadow of great trees. And in the valleys of the night-clad hills there were dark creatures old and strong. To those lands and forests the Valar seldom came, save only Yavanna and Orima. And Yavanna would walk there in the shadows, grieving, because the growth and promise of the spring of Arda was stayed. And she set asleep upon many things that had arisen in the spring, so that they should not age, but should wait for a time of awakening, that yet should be. But in the north, Melkor built his strength,
and he slept not, but watched and labored. And the evil things that he had perverted walked abroad, and the dark and slumbering woods were haunted by monsters and shapes of dread. And in Otomno, he gathered his demons about him, those spirits who first adhered to him in the days of his splendor, and became most like him in his corruption. Their hearts were of fire, but they were cloaked in darkness, and terror went before them. They had whips of flame. Balrogs they were named in Middle-earth in later days. And in that dark time, Melkor bred many other monsters of divers shapes and kinds that long troubled the world, and his realm spread now ever southward over Middle-earth. And Melkor made also a fortress and armory not far from the northwestern shores of the sea, to resist any assault that might come from Aman. That stronghold was commanded by Sauron, lieutenant of Melkor, and it was named Angband. It came to pass that the Valar held council, for they became troubled by the tidings that Yavanna and Orome brought from the outer lands. And Yavanna spoke before the Valar, saying, "Ye mighty of Arda, the vision of Ilúvatar was brief and soon taken away, so that maybe we cannot guess within a narrow count of days the hour appointed. Yet be sure of this. The hour approaches, and within this age our hope shall be revealed, and the children shall awake. Shall we then leave the lands of their dwelling desolate and full of evil? Shall they walk in darkness while we have light? Shall they call Melkor Lord while Manwë sits upon Tani Gwetil?" And Tolkas cried, "Nay, let us make war swiftly. Have we not rested from strife overlong, and is not our strength now renewed? Shall one alone contest with us forever?" But at the bidding of Manwë, Mandos spoke, and he said, "In this age, the children of Ilúvatar shall come indeed, but they come not yet. Moreover, it is doomed that the firstborn shall come in the darkness, and shall look first upon the stars. Great light shall be for their waning. To Varda ever shall they call at need." Then Varda went forth from the council, and she looked out from the height of Tani Gwetil, and beheld the darkness of Middle-earth beneath the innumerable stars, faint and far. Then she began a great labor, greatest of all the works of the Valar since their coming into Arda. She took the silver dews from the vats of Telperion, and therewith she made new stars, and brighter against the coming of the firstborn. Wherefore, she whose name out of the deeps of time and the labors of Ea was Tintala, the Kindler, was called after by the elves Elantari, Queen of the Stars. Carnhill and Luinil, Nena and Lumbar, Alcarinque and Elamira she wrought in that time, and many other of the ancient stars she gathered together and set as signs in the heavens of Arda. Wilwarin, Telumendil, Soronume, and Anarima, and Menelmaka with his shining belt that forebodes the last battle that shall be at the end of days. And high in the north as a challenge to Melkor, she set the crown of 7 mighty stars to swing. Valakirka, the sickle of the Valar, and sign of doom. It is told that even as Varda ended her labors, and they were long, when first Menelmaka strode up the sky, and the blue fire of Heluin flickered in the mists above the borders of the world, in that hour the children of the earth awoke, the firstborn of Ilúvatar. By the starlit mirror of Kuivienin, water of awakening, they rose from the sleep of Ilúvatar. And while they dwelt yet silent by Kuivienin, their eyes beheld first of all things the stars of heaven. Therefore they have ever loved the starlight,
and have revered Varda Elantari above all the Valar. In the changes of the world, the shapes of lands and of seas have been broken and remade. Rivers have not kept their courses, neither have mountains remained steadfast. And to Quivienen there is no returning. But it is said among the elves that it lay far off in the east of Middle-earth, and northward, and it was a bay in the inland sea of Helkar. And that sea stood where aforetime the roots of the mountain of Iluin had been before Melkor overthrew it. Many waters flowed down thither from heights in the east, and the first sound that was heard by the elves was the sound of water flowing, and the sound of water falling over stone. Long they dwelt in their first home by the water under stars, and they walked the earth in wonder, and they began to make speech and to give names to all things that they perceived. Themselves they named the Quendi, signifying those that speak with voices, for as yet they had met no other living things that spoke or sang. And on a time it chanced that Orome rode eastward in his hunting, and he turned north by the shores of Helkar and passed under the shadows of the Orokani, the mountains of the east. Then on a sudden Naha set up a great neighing and stood still, and Orome wondered and sat silent, and it seemed to him that in the quiet of the land under the stars he heard afar off many voices singing. Thus it was that the Valar found at last, as it were by chance, those whom they had so long awaited. And Orome, looking upon the elves, was filled with wonder, as though they were beings sudden and marvellous and unforeseen, for so it shall ever be with the Valar. From without the world, though all things may be forethought in music or foreshown in vision from afar, to those who enter verily into Ea, each in its time shall be met at unawares as something new and unforetold. In the beginning, the elder children of Iluvatar were stronger and greater than they have since become, but not more fair. For though the beauty of the Quendi in the days of their youth was beyond all other beauty that Iluvatar had caused to be, it has not perished but lives in the west, and sorrow and wisdom have enriched it. And Orome loved the Quendi, and named them in their own tongue Eldar, the people of the stars. But that name was after borne only by those who followed him upon the westward road. Yet many of the Quendi were filled with dread at his coming, and this was the doing of Melkor. For by after knowledge the wise declare that Melkor, ever watchful, was first aware of the awakening of the Quendi, and sent shadows and evil spirits to spy upon them and waylay them. So it came to pass some years ere the coming of Orome, that if any of the elves strayed far abroad, alone or few together, they would often vanish and never return. And the Quendi said that the hunter had caught them, and they were afraid. And indeed the most ancient songs of the elves, of which echoes are remembered still in the west, tell of the shadow shapes that walked in the hills above Quivienen, or would pass suddenly over the stars, and of the dark rider upon his wild horse that pursued those that wandered to take them and devour them. Now Melkor greatly hated and feared the riding of Orome, and either he sent indeed his dark servants as riders, or he set lying whispers abroad for the purpose that the Quendi should shun Orome, if ever they should meet. Thus it was that when Naha neighed, and Orome indeed came among them, some of the Quendi hid themselves, and some fled and were lost. But those that had courage and stayed perceived swiftly that the great rider was no shape out of darkness, for the light of Aman was in his face, and all the noblest of the elves were drawn towards it. But of those unhappy ones who were ensnared by Melkor, little is known of a certainty. For who of the living has descended into the pits of Utumno, or has explored the darkness of the councils of Melkor? Yet this is held true by the wise of Eressia, that all those of the Quendi who came into the hands of Melkor, ere Autumnal was broken, were put there in prison, and by slow arts of cruelty were corrupted and enslaved. And thus did Melkor breed the hideous race of the orcs, in envy and mockery of the elves, of whom they were afterwards the bitterest foes. For the orcs had life, and multiplied after the manner of the children of Ilúvatar. Nought that had life of its own, nor the semblance of life, could ever Melkor make since his rebellion in the Ainulindale before the beginning. So say the wise. And deep in their dark hearts, the orcs loathed the master whom they served in fear, the maker only of their misery. This, it may be, was the vilest deed of Melkor, and the most hateful to Ilúvatar. Aramis stayed a while among the Quendi, and then swiftly he rode back over land and sea to Valinor, and brought the tidings to Valmar, and he spoke of the shadows that troubled Quivienen. Then the Valar rejoiced, and yet they were in doubt amid their joy, and they debated long what counsel it were best to take for the guarding of the Quendi from the shadow of Melkor. But Arime returned at once to Middle-earth, and abode with the elves. Manwë sat long in thought upon Tani Quetil, and he sought the counsel of Ilúvatar. And coming then down to Valmar, he summoned the Valar to the Ring of Doom, and thither came even Ulmo from the outer sea. Then Manwë said to the Valar, "This is the counsel of Ilúvatar in my heart, that we should take up again the mastery of Arda, at whatsoever cost, and deliver the Quendi from the shadow of Melkor." Then Tulkas was glad, but Aule was grieved, foreboding the hurts of the world that must come of that strife. But the Valar made ready, and came forth from Aman in strength of war, resolving to assault the fortresses of Melkor and make an end. Never did Melkor forget that this war was made for the sake of the elves, and that they were the cause of his downfall. Yet they had no part in those deeds, and they know little of the riding of the might of the West against the North in the beginning of their days. Melkor met the onset of the Valar in the northwest of Middle-earth, and all that region was much broken. But the first victory of the hosts of the West was swift, and the servants of Melkor fled before them to Autumno. Then the Valar passed over Middle-earth, and they set a guard over Quivienen, and thereafter the Quendi knew nothing of the great battle of the powers, save that the earth shook and groaned beneath them, and the waters were moved, and in the north there were lights as of mighty fires. Long and grievous was the siege of Autumno, and many battles were fought before its gates, of which naught but the rumour is known to the elves. In that time the shape of Middle-earth was changed, and the great sea that sundered it from Aman grew wide and deep, and it broke in upon the coasts and made a deep gulf to the southward. Many lesser bays were made between the great gulf and Hel-Caraxa far in the north, where Middle-earth and Aman came nigh together. Of these, the Bay of Balar was the chief, and into it the mighty river Sirion flowed down from the new-raised highlands northwards, Dorthonion and the mountains about Hithlum. The lands of the far north were all made desolate in those days, for there Autumno was delved exceeding deep, and its pits were filled with fires and with great hosts of the servants of Melkor. But at the last the gates of Autumno were broken, and the halls unroofed, and Melkor took refuge in the uttermost pit. Then Tulkas stood forth as champion of the Valar, and wrestled with him, and cast him upon his face, and he was bound with the chain Angainor that Aule had wrought, and led captive, and the world had peace for a long age. Nonetheless, the Valar did not discover all the mighty vaults and caverns hidden with deceit far under the fortresses of Angband and Autumno. Many evil things still lingered there, and others were dispersed and fled into the dark, and roamed in the waste places of the world awaiting a more evil hour, and Sauron they did not find. But when the battle was ended, and from the ruin of the north great clouds arose and hid the stars, the Valar drew Melkor back to Valinor, bound hand and foot and blindfold, and he was brought to the Ring of Doom. There he lay upon his face before the feet of Manwë and sued for pardon. But his prayer was denied, and he was cast into prison in the fastness of Mandos, whence none can escape, neither Valar nor Elf nor mortal man. Vast and strong are those halls, and they were built in the west of the land of Amon. There was Melkor doomed to abide for 3 ages long before his cause should be tried anew, or he should plead again for pardon. Then again the Valar were gathered in council, and they were divided in debate. For some, and of those Ulmo was the chief, held that the Quendi should be left free to walk as they would in Middle-earth, and with their gifts of skill to order all the lands and heal their hurts. But the most part feared for the Quendi in the dangerous world amid the deceits of the starlit dusk, and they were filled, moreover, with the love of the beauty of the elves, and desired their fellowship. At the last, therefore, the Valar summoned the Quendi to Valinor, there to be gathered at the knees of the powers in the light of the trees for ever. And Mandos broke his silence, saying, "So it is doomed." From this summons came many woes that afterwards befell. But the elves were at first unwilling to hearken to the summons, for they had as yet seen the Valar only in their wrath as they went to war, save Orome alone, and they were filled with dread. Therefore Orome was sent again to them, and he chose from among them ambassadors who should go to Valinor and speak for their people, and these were Ingwe, Finwë, and Elwë, who afterwards were kings. And coming they were filled with awe by the glory and majesty of the Valar, and desired greatly the light and splendour of the trees. Then Orome brought them back to Cui Vienen, and they spoke before their people, and counselled them to heed the summons of the Valar, and remove into the west. Then befell the first sundering of the elves. For the kindred of Ingwe, and the most part of the kindreds of Finwë and Elwë, were swayed by the words of their lords, and were willing to depart and follow Orome. And these were known ever after as the Eldar, by the name that Orome gave to the elves in the beginning in their own tongue. But many refused the summons, preferring the starlight and the wide spaces of Middle-earth to the rumour of the trees. And these are the Avari, the unwilling. And they were sundered in that time from the Eldar, and met never again until many ages were past. The Eldar prepared now a great march from their first homes in the east, and they were arrayed in 3 hosts. The smallest host, and the first to set forth, was led by Ingwe, the most high lord of all the elvish race. He entered into Valinor and sits at the feet of the powers, and all elves revere his name. But he came never back, nor looked again upon Middle-earth. The Vanyar were his people. They are the fair elves, the beloved of Manwë and Varda, and few among men have spoken with them. Next came the Noldor, a name of wisdom, the people of Finwë. They are the deep elves, the friends of Aule, and they are renowned in song, for they fought and laboured long and grievously in the northern lands of old. The greatest host came last, and they are named the Teleri, for they tarried on the road, and were not wholly of a mind to pass from the dusk to the light of Valinor. In water they had great delight, and those that came at last to the western shores were enamoured of the sea. The sea elves, therefore, they became in the land of Aman, the Falmari, for they made music beside the breaking waves. 2 lords they had, for their numbers were great, Elwë Singolo, which signifies grey mantle, and Olwë, his brother. These were the three kindreds of the Eldalia, who, passing at length into the uttermost west in the days of the trees, are called the Calaquendi, elves of the light. But others of the Eldar there were who set out indeed upon the westward march, but became lost upon the long road, or turned aside, or lingered on the shores of Middle-earth. And these were for the most part of the kindred of the Teleri, as is told hereafter. They dwelt by the sea, or wandered in the woods and mountains of the world, yet their hearts were turned towards the west. Those elves the Calaquendi called the Umanya, since they came never to the land of Aman and the Blessed Realm. But the Umanya and the Avari alike they call the Moriquendi, elves of the darkness, for they never beheld the light that was before the sun and moon. It is told that when the hosts of the Eldalia departed from Quivienen, Oromë rode at their head upon Naha, his white horse shod with gold. And passing northward about the Sea of Helkar, they turned towards the west. Before them great clouds hung still black in the north above the ruins of war, and the stars in that region were hidden. Then not a few grew afraid and repented and turned back and are forgotten. Long and slow was the march of the Eldar into the west, for the leagues of Middle-earth were uncounted and weary and pathless. Nor did the Eldar desire to hasten, for they were filled with wonder at all that they saw, and by many lands and rivers they wished to abide. And though all were yet willing to wander, many feared rather their journey's end than hoped for it. Therefore, whenever Oromë departed, having at times other matters to heed, they halted and went forward no more until he returned to guide them. And it came to pass after many years of journeying in this manner that the Eldar took their course through a forest, and they came to a great river, wider than any they had yet seen, and beyond it were mountains whose sharp horns seemed to pierce the realm of the stars. This river, it is said, was even the river which was after called Anduin the Great, and was ever the frontier of the west lands of Middle-earth. But the mountains were the Hithaglia, the towers of mist upon the borders of Eriador. Yet they were taller and more terrible in those days, and were reared by Melkor to hinder the riding of Oromë. Now the Teleri abode long on the east bank of that river, and wished to remain there. But the Vanyar and the Noldor passed over it, and Oromë led them into the passes of the mountains. And when Oromë was gone forward, the Teleri looked upon the shadowy heights and were afraid. Then one arose in the host of Olwë, which was ever the hindmost on the road. Lenwë he was called. He forsook the westward march and led away a numerous people southwards down the great river, and they passed out of the knowledge of their kin until long years were past. Those were the Nandor, and they became a people apart, unlike their kin, save that they loved water, and dwelt most beside falls and running streams. Greater knowledge they had of living things, tree and herb, bird and beast, than all other elves. In after years, Denethor, son of Lenwë, turned again west at last, and led a part of that people over the mountains into Beleriand, ere the rising of the moon. At length, the Vanyar and the Noldor came over Ered Luin, the Blue Mountains, between Eriador and the westernmost land of Middle-earth, which the elves after named Beleriand. And the foremost companies passed over the Vale of Sirion and came down to the shores of the great sea between Drengist and the Bay of Balar. But when they beheld it, great fear came upon them, and many withdrew into the woods and highlands of Beleriand. Then Oromë departed and returned to Valinor to seek the counsel of Manwë, and left them. And the host of the Teleri passed over the misty mountains, and crossed the wide lands of Eriador, being urged on by Elwë Singolo. For he was eager to return to Valinor and the light that he had beheld, and he wished not to be sundered from the Noldor, for he had great friendship with Finwë, their lord. Thus, after many years, the Teleri also came at last over Ered Luin into the eastern regions of Beleriand.